Okay, we're starting on tab, the bottom of your Daled Amud Bet, but we'll go back a little bit to this issue of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. We're in the middle of a machloket, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, a very basic machloket about the tzara. Okay, Beit Shammai says, coming from our Mishnah, that if we have a woman who's married to, okay, we have two women married to a man, this woman is Isur Erever to her brother, so Beit Shammai says, she's poter the tzara, right? Meaning that if the tzara, if this guy dies without kids, the tzara is patur from yibum with the brother, okay? As is, obviously, the erva is patura from yibum, you can't do yibum with him, and also the tzara is. Now, according to Beit Shammai, only the erva is patura, but the tzara has to marry him. So what do we have, okay? And this is important to establish for today. If the tzara marries the Yabam, according to Beit Hillel, it's, what is it, Isur? Karet. Because of, right, which is Erva, right? But Isur Karet, because he's her Eshet Ach. Only because of Yibum, we've matured Eshet Ach. So according to Beit Hillel, if they get married, like Beit Shammai goes to, right, does what Beit Hillel says, if Beit Shammai does what they say, right, then according to Beit Hillel, this is going to be an Isur Karet. This tzara with the guy. According to Beit Hillel, if the woman does what Beit Hillel says, which is she's patur from Yibum, then she goes and marries some other guy, okay? According to Beit Shammai thinks this is Aser, because Beit Shammai thinks she didn't do Yibum. If she didn't do Yibum, then it's an Isur Lav It's an Isur Lav that she can't go marry Chutzal Ishzar, right? She can't go and marry somebody else. So those are that's our main issue. So again, if Beit Shammai, I don't have my marker. If it's not around, if right without chalitza, okay. The assumption is according to Beit Shammai, she's ptura, doesn't need it. Now what we're not relating to is if there were other brothers, she'd have to do the other brothers. The assumption here is he's the only brother, okay, or. There's no, right, she's usher maybe to all of them or something like that. But she's only ptura from Yibum from this guy. She can marry another brother or another brother or another brother. But let's say there are no other brothers. Or let's say all the other brothers also have this relationship with her somehow. So in any case, you understand, the tzara is not ptura from Yibum 100%. She's ptura from Yibum from this guy who's the Isur Erva with this woman, right? Okay. So she goes next in line, but let's say the next in line is also Isur Erva, and right, and she's finished with all the brothers, or there's only two brothers, then she's ptura according to, right, she's free to go marry somebody else. That's just a side point, just to point out. But in any case, the issue is that if Beit Hillel does their thing, according to Beit Shammai, that's going to be Isur Lav, because she's going to now go marry somebody else. If Beit Shammai does according to their opinion, according to Beit Hillel, that's an Isur Karet. And that's where the Gemara on Yudala went into different issues about the different directions. Now, before Klash Hashanah asked about this Isur of Lotit Godudu, and it definitely needs more attention. This Isur of Lotit Godudu means that you can't make halacha agudot agudot, right? So what does that mean? Right? You can't have different factions doing different things. Now, first of all, you have to understand the historical context, what was going on here, that... close the tree so it's our move seats. Lotit Godudu basically means that we don't want the Torah being different Torah, and we don't want people doing different things. Now, obviously, nowadays we have tons of things that go on like this, and everybody holds something different, and I think it has to be understood in a historical context. In those days, there was a much more central authority. And what we're going to deal with today, especially, and tomorrow, is all these issues of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel and the Vikuchim between them. And did they have a unified front? Did they not have a unified front? That's our big question. Did Beit Shammai do like Beit Hillel in the end? Did they? Okay, this is, by the way, historically, this happened before halacha was decided 100% that we go like Beit Hillel. Later generations already, it was clear. But all these brayot that they're bringing are all from the time of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, all these people when it was still, it wasn't decided 100%. Okay, and because of that, they were having all these issues because in those days there was a much more centralized authority. Okay, and you can imagine why, and then the question is, when there's central authority and people go against the central authority, how do we relate to it? That's what do we do? So do we assume, do we say, well, in a case where it's not noticeable that they're doing it, like with the Isur Malacha, so you're just not doing Malacha. Okay, no, you need to go to work that day. How many people don't go to work on various days, right? This happens all over, Auntie. You see people in the middle of the day, they're out to coffee, they're here, they're doing things, right? It doesn't mean that you're going with a different minhag. It just means you didn't go to work that day. So that's not a noticeable thing that's going to... Now, we talked about this also. This is all Dor Yavneh, right? Now, in Dor Yavneh, it was all those issues of we are making a central authority. It's very important. After the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, they want to keep the power central. And that's where this issue is coming up. And I think it has to be understood in a historical context as to where everything fits in. And the part of the issue here is, even before it was 100% decided that we go like Beit Hillel, did Beit Shammai give in to Beit Hillel? Did he not? We're going to see Rabbi Tarfon. We're going to talk about him today. He's a very interesting figure in this whole Beit Shammai thing because he was a Talmud of Beit Shammai. We're going to get into some stories about him that don't necessarily appear here. There's one story here, and there's two other major stories with him that are very interesting, and we'll see if we have time to discuss them. Okay, so that's a little background. What we're going to try to do today, you can even just look at the sheet for a minute, okay? We're going to start with, just to give you a perspective on the daf, a proof that Beit Shammai did kedivrehem, we're going to reject it. Another proof, and there's a whole question now, there were two opinions. Some people said, Beit Shammai asu. They continued to do what they thought. Now, obviously, what I didn't mention before, which just goes without saying, is marriage is a very central issue. Who can marry who? We see it today. Big problems with the Rabbanut because the Rabbanut doesn't recognize conversions and people doesn't recognize proof of Jewishness. And then people get married outside the Rabbanut and then the Rabbanut doesn't accept them as Jews. And it's a huge problem. Who is a Jew? Who can marry who? And that's really what our issue gets to the core of. Is it Isur Karet? If it's Isur Karet, then we're going to see, at least according to some opinions, the Banim are Mamzerim. If the Banim are Mamzerim, they can't marry. If it's Isur Lav, then the Banim aren't Mamzerim, so it's less of a problem. But on the other hand, there's a diyum we're going to get to at the end of the daf is maybe they're psulim l'kuhuna, which obviously is going to affect other things. So all of this is very, very important to have a central, authority on these issues. And that's why this issue is very critical. So again, just going through what we're going to do on the daf, we're going to bring a list of proofs that Beit Shammai continued to do their approach, and then we're going to reject them all. Then we're going to bring difficulties, sources that basically say that if Beit Shammai didn't do like what they said, it's going to create a problem. We're going to answer up the kushiyot. Then we're going to go back to bringing some more proofs that Beit Shammai did kedivrehem. Okay? So we're going to try just to prove the different sides and or disprove other sides. Okay, here, there's also one here. Okay, so now we're going to start from the Tashma at the bottom. Five lines from the bottom of Yudalad Amud Bet. Tashma, Da'amar Rabbi Yochanan Ben Uri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri gets up again. We're talking about Dor Yavneh. There's a central authority that they're sitting in the Sanhedrin. They say, Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri suggests, let's resolve this problem. Okay, just to review, if we go like Beit Shammai, then what's going to happen? Okay, what's our issue? Beit Shammai says the Tzara is supposed to marry the Erva's husband. Okay? So now, if the Tzara marries the Erva's husband, according to Beit Hillel, this is Eshet Ach, and it's an Isur Karet. So if we do like Beit Shammai, Havla Mamzer, Lidivrei Beit Hillel, because Beit Hillel says she's Patur from Yibum, if she's Patur from Yibum, she can't marry Eshet Ach. Now, second, Beit Hillel, if we do like Beit Hillel, what's going to happen? This Tzara, when he dies, this Tzara is going to go marry some Joe Schmo guy, not a relative, right? She marries someone else. She doesn't do Yibum. If she doesn't do Yibum, according to Beit Shammai, Havlad Pagum, because it's an Isur Lav, she can't go marry the Ish Zar until she takes care of Yibum, and she didn't take care of Yibum. So, what happened? What does it mean, Havlad Pagum? It means can't marry a Kohen. Okay, so we get to it at the end of the daf, but here there's also mention of it, and we'll see it much more at the end of the daf. So what does he suggest? Let's come up with a takana that will resolve everything. We understand she can't marry Eshedish because of La Mamzer, but if we just do Chalitza, then we'll resolve the problem. Okay, great solution. Unfortunately, what happened? Lo hispiku ligmor et hadavar ad shenitrafa sha'ah. It wasn't an easy time period, right? It was after the Chorban Beit HaMikdash. And some tzarot started happening, and they didn't get to vote on it, okay? Because everything they did those days was with voting. So they didn't do the vote, and it wasn't resolved. Amar le Rashbag, ma na'aseh lehim letzarot harishonot me'ata. Rashbag says, we also have another problem. Okay, now that we didn't deal with this, what's going to happen with all the tzarot? If we would do this takana, what's going to happen to all the tzarot harishonot that didn't do this chalitza? This doesn't totally resolve our problem because we have all these kids now of mamzerim, right? And it's going to keep going down through the generations. Or psule chitun lekuna. All those things go from generation to generation. So this might resolve the problem from here on in, but it doesn't deal with all these kids that are prancing about with the wrong, depending on who you hold by, with a problem, either a mamzer or a psul. So now, what's the issue here? What are we trying to prove? That this must mean that Beit Shammai asu kedivrehem, because if they didn't asu kedivrehem, then you wouldn't have this problem of the tzarot harishonot. Because they wouldn't, right? Everyone did the same thing, then we'd had no crop. Iyamar bishlama asu. So if you say Beit Shammai asu kedivrehem, hainu deka'amar ma'naseh. That's why Rashbag says, what are we going to do? Ela iyamar lo asu my ma'naseh. So what does it mean, ma'naseh? Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzhak lo nitzricha ela letzara atzma. Now he explains that you don't have to assume that's what it means. You could read it differently. This is what he meant. Hanach tzarot debeit hilel lebeit shamai, hechi ni'avid lehu. If these tzarot already got married, okay, let's say the tzarot of Beit Hilel, so what does that mean? They went and married some regular guy. Now, what can we do if we want to have the tzarot go lefi also Beit Shammai? What could we do? We could have them do chalitza with the brother. So what? They're already married, but we'll make them do chalitza with the brother. Okay? So now what's the problem? We really can't do that, because if lichlitzu, if we have them do chalitza, mim'ase agavrayu, their husbands, it's going to be a little awkward. In other words, what happens? She's married to this guy, but while she's married to him, because, right, in other words, his question is, what are we going to do to once already got married? And what's his issue? Not because Beit Shammai, not because we hold like Beit Shammai, but if we want Beit Shammai to feel better that we're not going to have psulei chitun according to his explanation, is what's the issue? We have a central authority. We have Beit Hillel. Everyone agrees with Beit Hillel. But there are still followers of Beit Shammai out there. And if we want to make them comfortable with marrying, okay, because what did we have in the page before? That they, how they do it? They just told them, this person is a psul chitum for you. So now they want to have it so the Beit Shammai people can feel comfortable. So what would you say? She could do chalitza with this guy. And if she does chalitza, then it's okay that she's married this guy. But if you're married to someone and you do chalitza with someone else, it looks like as if you were with that guy. Now, this chalitza means you have some sort of connection to him, a relationship with him. So it's a little bit inappropriate. It makes the husband feel uncomfortable. It makes him feel like she was with some other guy, and as if it also makes their marriage look like it was faulty from the beginning. And that's really not a good situation. So what does he say? If we want to do that, mimasu akavrayu, v'chitem alimasan, and let's say, so what? It's more important, right? There's conflicting values here. More important, they do chalitza. What is the answer? Great answer. The ways of the Torah are not meant to be mu'usim. They're not meant to be things that would seem unpleasant, uncomfortable. That's not the way they were meant to be. And because of that, we can't do that solution. And that's what he means. And therefore, you can't learn from here anything, whether asu or lo asu, because it can go both ways. Okay, Tashma. Here we're getting to our interesting character, Rabbi Tarfon. Da'ama Rabbi Tarfon, te'evani, here's a great lashon, te'evani, I am so dying to do this, okay? What is he dying to do? Right, from, te'avon, okay? Matai tavot tzarat habat liyadi ve'asa'ena. I'm dying to have my daughter, okay, now I'm going to say this in a very extreme lashon. I'm dying to have the daughter of my husband die so that her tzara will come before me and I will do yibum with her. Okay? In other words, there was obviously some relationship there. I forget exactly how it works. But basically what he's saying is, without getting into everything, he wants to prove Beit Shammai's opinion that you're allowed to marry the tzara of the erva. That's what he really wants to do. Crazy, right? And he wants this situation to come to his hands. Now, you think this sounds crazy, right? It sounds a little awkward. But first of all, why is he, right, in this case, okay, as opposed to the other two cases we're going to talk about for quickly, he is asking basically for, he's asking for someone to die, okay, which in this case, it's his daughter's husband to die just so he can prove Beit Shammai's opinion. Okay? A little awkward. Now, if you look at this in the context of Rabbi Tarfon, I don't know if you remember this, but from Bracha. Okay, you remember the famous story in Bracha, the Mishnah, where there's a machloket b'shach p'chav kumecha? Do you have to do it lying down when you say Shema? Or can you do it any way you want, according to Beit Hillel? And Rabbi Tarfon says, sikanti v'atzmi, I put myself in a dangerous situation, and I lie down on the ground in the middle of the, right at nighttime, and I almost got attacked by a lease team, you know, by robbers. What?
And they called him an idiot.
They said, "Kedai ha'ita lamut." Okay, they say to him, you should have died.
Right.
Okay, so number one, you see here again this issue. He's trying so hard to prove Beit Shammai that he'll put himself in a dangerous situation. Here he's putting his daughter in a dangerous situation, right? He's saying, I so much want to do this. And the other great story is a story where he basically, he wants to, there's a machloka Beit Shammai Beit Hillel with Shemitah, very relevant, okay? When Shemitah comes, you're supposed to be mafkir all your perot. But what about fruits that you brought into your house? Once you bring them into your house, are those yours and no one else can come take them? So Beit Hillel says you have to go ask permission before you take fruits from, you know, I think they have to give it to you, but you have to ask permission. Okay? Beit Shammai holds you don't have to ask permission. Now Rabbi Tarfon wanted to create a situation where this would happen, where he would go and show that Beit Shammai was right and you could take it without permission. But he didn't want to go into someone else's house to do it, because if he goes into someone's house, it looks like he's robbed, right? He's stealing from someone else, and he wants it for, it looked like, it would look like he has ulterior motives of money, like financial. He wants the fruits. So what did he do? He dressed up in his own house, and he went and started taking the stuff from his house, okay, to show that you can go take without asking. And the shomrim that were there beat him up. And then he said, but you're about to bury Rabbi Tarfon. Like, he almost got killed again. The same thing. Okay? And then they said, oh my God, I'm sorry, it was Rabbi Tarfon. They asked for Mechila. He says, don't worry, I was Mocha you from the beginning. Very interesting story. There's a lot to do with it. Anyway, we don't have time for it. But what I wanted to show is these three stories show that Rabbi Tarfon so strongly wanted to show Beit Shammai's opinion that in all three cases, he brings himself to a kind of situation. There's even a Gemara in the Yerushalmi that talks about the three together and how he was misaken at that smo. Okay, he put himself in danger to prove Beit Shammai, and he really, that's why you see that it wasn't, we always say, oh, we hold like Beit Hillel, but not in every time period. In that time period, it was still up in the air, and he wanted to go all the way out and show that I could do it. Okay, so now, what do you see here? He wanted to marry the Tzaha, which means that we pulled, that Beit Shammai was doing Kedivrehem. Now, by the way, I just want to point out, this whole sugya is a little problematic, because the Gemara is coming to prove these things after it was already decided that we hold like Beit Hillel. But they were proving it using sources that were from before it was decided. Do you understand the problem here? And as the Gemara looks at everything as if it's not historically, right? They're looking at it as if everything's on the same plane. Yes, the brighters are stronger, but it doesn't mean that things were different then, right? And they're equating everything. But there's a or else they're trying to talk about, maybe they're saying before it was decided, were Beit Shammai doing. You have to, it's a little tricky. It's not clear what they're trying to say here. Whether they get the fact that there was a difference of time period and they're trying to see what was, or they're trying to say, if there's two different opinions, can someone still go ahead and do their opinion against what was decided? Okay, so now, what do they say? No, it doesn't mean, and I will marry her. Ema ve'asiena. He says, and I want to marry her off. He wasn't talking necessarily about his own daughter. He said, I want a situation like this to happen. Again, it's a little upsetting. Why would he want a situation to happen where someone would die without children and the wife would be left on her own? But I want a situation like that to happen so that I can marry off the tzara, lefi shitat Beit Hillel, to the chutza, the ish zar, right? Lo tia esh damei chutza l'ish zar until she does chalitza, but or Yibum, but Beit Hillel doesn't think she needs to do Yibum in this case because she's the Tzahan, she's Petura, she's the Tzara of the Erva. I want this, right? Basically, I want this to be the father, this to be the daughter, the Tzara of this Yabam, right? Would then, according to Beit Hillel, go marry someone else. So I want to marry her off. Okay, right? In English, this would get more tricky, right? Marry is the same thing. I want to marry her or I want to marry her off. It's basically, you would also say, I'm marrying her. Right? Even though it means I'm marrying her off. In Hebrew, it's different words, but we say asiena, right? Esaena, asiena. You can see how people would make a mistake with it. But then they say, vahate evani ka'amar. But what do you mean? If he just wants to prove Beit Hillel, why would he say the lashon te'evani? Right? I really want to do this. What do you mean I really want to do this? Everyone knows Beit Hillel is who we pass them like. You wouldn't need to say, I really want to do this. So, and not only that, what the Gemara doesn't relate is that Rabbi Tarfon was from Beit Shammai, and he, you know, it would be strange for him to say, I really want to prove Beit Hillel. So then they say, no, why was he so strong about it? Lafuche mid Rabbi Yochanan ben Yuri. He wanted to say, I don't think we need to do like Takanat Rabbi Yochanan ben Yuri, that she needs to do chalitza. I want to marry her off right away and show that there's no need. You don't even need to be Yotzei Shitat Beit Shammai. Okay, in which case, we haven't really proven anything about Beit Shammai, whether they really did like they wanted to or they didn't. This doesn't prove. It could go either way. Tashma, Ma'aseh bibitol shel Rabban Gamliel, Shaita nesua la'aba achiv, umet belo banim. His daughter was married to his brother. Okay, Abba is his name. La'aba achiv of Rabban Gamliel. Okay? Rabban Gamliel's daughter married his brother, okay, her uncle, which is allowed. Umet belo banim, v'yibem Rabban Gamliel et sarata. He did yibum with the tzara. There you go, perfect proof. We held like Beit Shammai. Now again, the Gemara is not addressing the fact that Rabban Gamliel was a Beit Hillel guy. It wasn't a Beit Shammai guy. Okay, and that's what the Gemara actually, the Gemara does address it. In other words, by the fact that the Gemara brings it, shows they weren't addressing it, but then the Gemara immediately answers. B'tizbara, Rabban Gamliel mitamidei Beit Shammai who? Can't possibly be. He was not mitamidei Beit Shammai. So what do they answer? Elashane bitosha Rabban Gamliel da'ilonit havai. She was an ilonit. What's an ilonit? She can't have children. And we learned that if she's an ilonit, right, if this is, right, again, this is our tzara, this is the Ereva, this is Rabban Gamliel's brother, this is Rabban Gamliel. She's the daughter of Rabban Gamliel. She was an ilonit. If she's an ilonit, it means she can't have children. It means she has no issue with Yibum, right? She's not part of the Yibum picture. And she can't have children, and the whole idea is Lakim Shem Ameh. Although we'll see that there's two different reasons about the ilonit. Anyway, if she's out of the picture, then the tzara, of course, can marry, and that's where Rabban Gamliel married the tzara of his brother. That's the answer given. They say, wait, but it doesn't make any sense. The seifa of that braita says, "Acherim omrim b'tol shel Rabban Gamliel ilonit hayta." It says that others say that she was an ilonit, which means what? Michlal, from here we can understand that Tanakama savar lav ilonit hayta. Tanakama didn't think she was an ilonit. Okay, so there must be some other reason why he married her. So now we have to explain what it is. So they're going to give three possible options of the machloket. The first one's going to stay within the ilonit machloket. That he kirba velo he kirba is ika benayu. There was a machloket about if you marry an ilonit and you didn't know she was an ilonit, and then you find out after you get married that she's an ilonit and can't have children, then you can say it was a mekach ta'ut. I never meant to marry you, and the first kiddushin is as if it's irrelevant, and then you can marry, and then it's as if they weren't married. If she was an ilonit to begin with, before the marriage, that everyone agrees with, okay? Once you marry her not knowing she's an ilonit, and then she's an ilonit, you could say mekach ta'ud and you can dissolve the marriage. But if he knew before when he married her, then there's a machloket about whether you can say the ilonit is as if she wasn't married, and as he can say later, oh, you know, I didn't want to be married with you, or not. So if Tanakama said, okay, or let's start backwards. Acher mamrim ilonit haita. She was an ilonit from the beginning. And he says, because she was an ilonit from the beginning, I have no problem with that. Even if she was an ilonit from the beginning, she's still poter from yibum, not because the marriage was dissolved, but she was poter from yibum because the reason she's poter from yibum is because she can't have children, so she can't be involved in yibum. But the first case says no. If she was legitimately married to him, he married her despite the fact that she's an ilonit, she was a full-fledged wife, and the tzara would be ptuha. Okay, and therefore the tzara can't marry. So therefore, the second opinion says it was that she wasn't an ilonit; she was an ilonit. The first Tanakhama says she was an ilonit who was found to be an ilonit after they already got married, and that was the lashon. If you remember in the Gemara earlier, they said nimtzu ilonit. Nimtzu means they discovered it, and Acherim says ilonit haita. She was from the beginning, and that was the machloket. Was she an ilonit from the beginning, or was she an ilonit after? He only discovered it later. Now, the second opinion is it's not really about an ilonit they're arguing. If you remember this case, both, right, the tzara, let's say the erva gets divorced from him, and she's not there when the yibum happens, when he dies. If she's not there, okay, but they were married to him at the same time, right, there was a point, kines, he first married her, the second woman, then he divorced the first wife. Now, and she's the erva. Now, according to one opinion, right, if they were both married at the same time, then it's still poter the tzara. So that's what Acherim hold, and that's why Acherim said that wasn't the issue. The issue was that she was an Eilonit, and that's why she was Petuha. But the Tanakhama says no. It was a case where Kines Ulevasov Geresh, and since at the time of his death, goes by the time of death, at the time of his death she wasn't married anymore, the daughter of Rabban Gamliel wasn't married to the guy, therefore the Tzara married Rabban Gamliel. Okay? And that was the machloka between them. Ibait Ema, the last option of machloka was Yesh Tanai Bibia Ikabinai. There's two different explanations. We'll go with one of them. If you make a condition and you say, I will marry you b'tnai that something, that you don't have a mum, let's say. You don't have something wrong with you. And then he sleeps with her. They have sex. And then he decides, oh, you know, you have a mum. Okay? And I want to cancel the kiddushin. Some people say it's too late. In other words, if you want to cancel this, you want to say this tonight, you have to do it before you consummate the relationship. And the bi'ahs will consummate the relationship, and therefore, okay, so yesh tanai b'bi'ah or ain tanai b'bi'ah. So some people say, the Tanakhama said, this was a case where it was after they had bi'ah, and he said, I don't want your condition to, right, this condition didn't take, like the tanai was not, you actually have a mum, but it, according to Acherim, it was too late, right? And therefore, what was the problem? She was an Eilonit. But according to Tanakhama, it wasn't too late. You can even cancel it tanai after bi'ah, and because of that, you can say that that was why, because she was already out of the picture, the bat, and Rabban Gamliel therefore married her tzara. Okay? Because that was the issue. She had a mum. Okay. So three different explanations to what the machloka was between them. In any case, it doesn't show anything about Beit Shammai, because there were other issues at stake here, and certainly Rabban Gamliel didn't marry his daughter's tzara because of Beit Shammai. So it doesn't prove anything. Mativ Rav Masharsha. Now we're going to have two kushiot on the fact that those who say Beit Shammai didn't, it's almost like the Gemara now thinks since we can't prove Beit Shammai asu, they must have lo'asu. So if we're going to say lo'asu, now we're going to bring two kushiot on that. Matav Rav Masharshia, Maaseh b'Rav Akiva, we actually learned this before, Sheliket etrog b'echad b'shvat v'nahag bo shnei isurin, echad k'divrei Beit Shammai v'echad k'divrei Beit Hillel, shma mina asu. What happened? The machloket about is, we learned this in Rosh Hashanah, is Rosh Hashanah li'ilanot on a Chab B'Shvat according to Beit Shammai or on Tu B'Shvat? Now, what's the relevance? You have to know what year it is to do which Maaser. So if it's the end of the second year, beginning of the third year, according, right, we do Maaser Sheni, first, second, fourth, and fifth. We do Maaser Ani on the third and the sixth year. So if it's, let's say, for example, second going into third, and you get to a Chab B'Shvat, so according to Beit Shammai, it's already the new year because a Chab B'Shvat. According to Beit Hillel, it's Tu B'Shvat. So it's second year. So what do? You do Maaser Ani? Do you do Maaser Sheni? So again, if you don't hold like Beit Shammai, then obviously you just do the Tu B'Shvat, right? And you go by, it's still the second year. But if you say that Beit Shammai Asu Kedivreihem, then it makes sense that Rabbi Akiva Nahag Bo Shnei Yisurin. He did both. He did Maaser Sheni and he did Maaser Ani. The Yerushalmi has a good explanation of how he did it. It's not that he took two Maasers and did his thing. Maaser Sheni, you bring to Yerushalayim, you put it on a coin and you give it to the Ani. You go and you eat it in Jerusalem, right? You buy with that money your Maaser Sheni fruits. So what did he do? He put his peirot on the coin. He took the coin to Jerusalem, ate the Maaser Sheni, and the peirot that he lechora turned into chulin now, they were mutar to him, he took those and gave them to poor people. So he basically took the same fruits but did two things with them. Okay, so now, shma minah asu. So now they say lo. That wasn't the issue. We actually saw this exact Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Akiva Gemara istapikle. V'lo yada I Beit Hillel b'cha b'shvat amor o b'tu b'shvat amor. It wasn't that he didn't know, should I go like Beit Hillel, should I go like Beit Shammai? He didn't remember who said what in the machloket. He was confused. Did Beit Hillel say Echa B'Shvat or did Beit Hillel say Tu B'Shvat? He didn't know what Beit Hillel said. That was his issue, and therefore it has nothing to do with his machlok. Matib Marzutra, another koshi. Masev Yalda Kalato Shel Shammai, we also saw this in Sukkah, Hazaken, okay, Shammai, the Shammai from Beit Shammai, okay, Upichet Et, right, just to remind you, Beit Shammai are the students of Shammai, not Shammai and Hillel themselves. Shammai and Hillel, by the way, had like three machlokot. It was their students who had all the arguments, okay? That's also known. Masevi alda kalato shel Shammai, his daughter-in-law had a baby, Shammai Zaken, upichet et ha-maziva v'sikech al gabei mita b'shvil katan. They had these roofs, there were wooden beams, and they put like a covering on them to keep the rain out. So he just picked up the covering, there was schach on top, basically. And he basically, right, he put some schach on top, and that was it. He made a sukkah for the baby, okay, newborn baby. has to sleep in a sukkah. That was his opinion. So again, what do you see here? Shema mina asu. It sounds like they did. So how could you say lo asu? So what did they say? And here we get back to the lo titko didu issue. What's the issue here? Even if Beit Shammai does like Beit Hillel, okay, they're allowed, if they want, in the privacy of their own house or anywhere, to do what they want, right? Can't you? So this is part of the issue. Can you or can you? If you do, it's going to make a statement. So if you do it in a way that it doesn't make a statement, because no one's really going to know, then it's okay. So what do they say? Haro'e omer la'afushe avir ka'avid. Anyone who sees him opening up the roof there is going to think he just wants to get some fresh air in the house. They're not going to think that he's doing it because he's going against Beit Hillel. Okay, and therefore they're going to say it doesn't prove that Beit Shammai really did Kedivrayim. It just proves in a case where there's no problem of Lotit going to do, then there's no problem that they do their own thing. But it doesn't mean that in general they did. Another case, we're going to see the same thing. Mativ Marzutra. Maseb Shoket Yehu. Okay, this is like a, what's the word? Like a marzev, what do you say? Like on a roof you have this, it's like a tunnel that leads water to from place to place. Like a gutter, right? Something like a gutter. There was a gutter of Yehu, I guess it was from the time of Yehu the king. Shaita b'Yerushalayim v'hayta nekuva l'mikvah. Okay, the water would go from there into the mikvah. Now there wasn't arba'in se'ah in this shoket, okay? But it was connected, we learned this before. If it's connected to the mikvah, right, with a hole, what did we learn? The hole has to be two etzba'ot that you can turn around. Okay, the shvoferet hanod, do you remember the shluker, the old-time shluker, right, that they had these goat, these, what are they called? Oils? Goat skins? Goat skins. They would put on their back and they would have like a tube that would go and they would drink through there. So the opening of that tube was two etzba'ot that you could turn around, and that's the opening that needs to be between these two things. But we're going to see that there's a machloket about it. So anyway, this shoket was nikuva l'mikvah. V'kol ta'arot shayu b'Yerushalayim. This is a clear case of exaggeration, okay? But all the ta'arot that were in Yerushalayim, nasin al gabah, they would tovel them in this shoket. V'shachu Beit Shammai b'hirchivuha. They wanted the hole to be open more than it was open. They thought that if, right, because there's this halacha of hashaka. As long as the waters are touching, this is how they use mikvahot in general. There's 40 se'ah of rainwater, and it's touching our mikvah, right? And it connects, then it's okay. So here you have the 40 se'ah in the mikvah. The shoket is touching it with an opening between them. So they're, right, they're connected. But the, again, the question is how big the opening. So now we're going to take a break in the mikvah, in the here. So it says, b'chivua, v'shachu Beit Shammai b'chivua, she'Beit Shammai omrim ad she'tipachet b'ruba. Okay, if you have there's between the two things, there's like a blockage, right? And then there's a hole within that blockage. So what Beit Shammai says is it doesn't matter how big it is, it has to be that there's less of it than more. More of it is a hole and less of it is a barrier. So where they connect, it has to be berov. So because of that, they said we're going to be marchiv the hole here so that it covers the majority of the space there. Hutznan, and there's a mission that says, now we're going to see Beit Hillel's opinion, Eruv mikvaot kishvoferet hanod. That's what we learned. It's exactly this thing. Bo'ovyal b'chalala, kishtei etzba'ot chazrot l'mkomam, two etzba'ot that can turn around. Have a little space to turn, meaning a little bit bigger than shtei etzba'ot. So what do you learn from here? Why did Beit Shammai open it? Because kanir asu, right? Shema mina asu. So how that goes again, it's lo asu. So then they say, no. Hatam haro'e omer la'afushe mayahu deka'avid. They wanted to increase the flow of water. That's why they opened it. And not necessarily, right? It won't look like they're doing it. So Beit Shammai really was doing the shitatam, but not because they were saying, we don't agree with Beit Hillel. They're saying, we know that we can do our shita, we can be machmir, because no one's going to think that we're doing it to show that we don't hold like Beit Hillel. So again, we don't have any good proof. Tashma. Now we're going to bring, okay, if you use your sheet, we're on the next side of the page, which is the Beit Shammai. Now we want to prove that they asu kedivrayim. Okay, we still can't figure this out. Did they? Didn't they? Tashma. De'amar Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok. Kshayiti lomed Torah etzel Rabbi Yochanan Achorani, ra'iti shaya ochel pat chareva b'melech. Now Rabbi Yochanan, by the way, Yochanan Achorani was also a student of Beit Shammai. I saw that he was eating pat b'melech. Like, that's all the food he had. B'shnei batzoret. There was a drought, and he was eating pat b'melech. Bati v'hodati et Abba. I told my father, Amarli, which is Rabbi Tzadok, Amarli, holech lo zitim. V'holachti lo, right? Bring him zitim. So I brought him. Ra'ahu tan she'en lachim. He saw that they were wet on the outside. Now, what are they wet from? The zitim? We learned this already. Do you remember if the zitim, the liquid comes out of the zitim, it's called the mohal. The mohal is considered, it's like shemen, right? And shemen is one of the sheva mashkin. And because it's the liquid comes out, it's mukhshar lekabel tumah. Okay? We're going to see that there's machloket about this. So we saw that they were wet. Amar li ein ani ochel zeitim. He says, I don't need olives. Okay? But really, right, he was being nice about it. He didn't want to make him feel bad. He was just saying, I don't need olives. I don't like olives. Okay? But, right, you see respect here, right? Even though really, he didn't want to eat them because he thought they were mukhshar lekabel tumah and therefore asur. Bati vahodati et Abba, I told my father, Amar li, lech emor lo, chavit nikuva hayta, ela shestamu ha-shmarim. It was a chavit with holes in it. It's just what happened was, eventually, the shmarim, the stuff that comes out of the zeitim, covered up the holes. Now, what's the relevance? Utnan, now we're going to see the Mishnah. Chavit shel zeitim megugalim, zeitim that are starting to get soft, which means that the juice is coming out of them. Beit shami yomrim, ein sricha lenakev. You don't need to be menakev. Why? Because the stuff that's coming out of them is really, there's a machloket, is it considered meperot? Okay, juice coming out of the fruit, and that's not machshir lekabel tumah, it's not one of the sheva mashkim, or is it considered shemen? So Beit Shammai says, you don't need to be menakev. Ubeit Hillel amrim, tricha lenakev. You have to make holes. What do the holes show? The holes show that you didn't want the liquid in there. That's why you made the holes, so that the liquid comes out. And if you don't want the liquid, we learned this. If you want something to be mukhshar lekabel tumah, it has to be that you wanted the liquid on them. If you didn't want the liquid on them, then it doesn't work to be mukhshar lekabel tumah. So Beit Hillel agrees that im nikva b'stamu ba'ab. So Beit Hillel says you have to make holes to show that you don't want the liquid. And if you do that, then it already shows that you weren't interested in the liquid. And therefore, it's not mukhshar lekabel tumah. Umodim, but they agree, she'im nikva v'stamu ha-shmarim, she'hi tehora. They agree, though, if you did make holes and it covered them up, it's tehora. Now, not because there's no liquid. There is liquid in there, right? But they agree that it's all about your intention. That's what matters here. So now, what do they say? V'af al pisha talmid shamai haya, kol ma'asav lo asa ela kedibrei Beit Hillel. What do you see here? Beit Shammai says, you don't need to be menakev, because the mohal is mei peirot, and it's not machshir. But when he said, tell him that there's holes in it, it shows that he was saying, lefi Beit Hillel. So what do you see here? That even though he was a Beit Shammai guy, he was going lefi Beit Hillel. And that's what Rabbi Tzadok said, don't worry, it's okay, there were holes in it, which showed that he was going like Beit Hillel. So now, iamar bishlama asu. But now, what's the issue? If you say asu Beit Shammai, then hainu ribute. That's why he had to tell him. It was like a chiddush. That, one second. I'm confusing one thing here. I'm missing some point. It's, if it's a chiddush, let me just look into Rashi, one second. If it's a chiddush, right, the chiddush is that, one second. Right, it was a chiddush that Rabbi Tzadok. I think I confused something. Rabbi Tzadok was the one who was the. Okay, that's what I confused. Rabbi Tzadok was the one who was the Talmid of Shammai, and the Talmid of Shammai was telling him, "Don't worry, it was nakuv lefi shitat Beit Hillel." That was the issue. Sorry, now I remember. I confused it. They thought it was coming from the son of Rabbi Tzadok. Now Rabbi Tzadok was a Beit Shammai guy. So the confusion was, the issue was that Rabbi Yochanan thought that they had like Beit Shammai, they didn't make holes in it because they don't think that the mohal is machshir lekabel tumah. And that's why he assumed that it would be a problem for him because he's a Beit Hillel guy. So comes Rabbi Tzadok to say, don't worry, I do like Beit Hillel. Now, why did he have to say that? If everybody did like Beit Hillel, then even if you had a Talmid of Shammai, you wouldn't worry that he was doing like Beit Shammai because nobody did like Beit Shammai. But in this case, he told him, no, I'm doing like Beit Hillel to show, even though normally I do like Beit Shammai, in this case I was very careful so that I could feed other people and so that if I had to give to other people, it would be kosher for them. So therefore, that's why he says it. But Ela, Iyamar lo asu mai ribute. Why does he have to tell him I'm doing like Beit Hillel? Obviously, he'd be doing like Beit Hillel. Everyone does like Beit Hillel. So again, you have a question here. Tashma, Shalut Rabbi Yoshua, Sarat Habat Mahu. Okay, so now they go to Rabbi Yoshua and they ask him, this is a great story also, what do we do with Tzarat Habat, right? Our big issue, do we go like Beit Shammai? Do we go like Beit Hillel? What do we do with her? Do we marry her off to the brother? Do we say, no, you have to marry you're free to marry anyone you want? Amar lahem, machloke beit shamai beit hillel. He answers them very, what's the word? Very PC, right? He doesn't get involved. He just says, it's a machloke. So they say, v'halacha kedivrei mi, Amar lahem, mipnei ma atem machnisim roshi ben shnei harim gdolim, ben shnei machloko gdolot, ben beit shamai beit hillel. Okay, what, I don't want to get involved in this. Mitiare ani shema yorutsu gulgalti. I'm worried that they're going to chop my head off. Who's going to chop his head off? What's the issue? So now, right, we're going to, what's the issue? That there are going to be Bani Mamzerim floating around who are going to have his head. Because they're going to say, I can't believe you just turned me into a Mamzer, right? Okay, so what's the issue? What does he say, though? Aval, he doesn't leave them totally without anything. He says, Aval ani me'id lachem al shtei mishpachot gedolot shayu b'Yerushalayim. Mishpachat Beit Tzvoim, miben Achmai, u'mishpachat Beit Kofayim, miben Mekoshesh. Shehem b'nei tzarot, u'mehem kohanim gdolim v'shemshu al gabei ha'mizbeach. So what does he say? But I'll tell you that there were these families, okay, that were the sons of Tzarot, okay, and there were kohanim gdolim that came out of them. Meaning, probably, right, that they married like Beit Hillel, they went to Ishzar, right, and then their sons were kohanim gdolim and Beit Shammai accepted it, presumably, right, and it was okay because Beit Shammai would say, if they married the Ishzar and it was Usher because they should have done Yibum, it would be Isur Lav, and Isur Lav would make the kids Pagum. So now we're going to go into the story a little bit. So what do they see from here? Iyamar Bishlama Asu Hainu Dekamar Mityareani, right? What was he scared of? He was only scared if people actually did like Beit Shammai. Otherwise, he wouldn't have any need to be scared. Ela Iyamar Lo Asu Amai Kamar Mityareani, right? So why would he say Mityareani? So again, it must be proving that Asu. So then they say, another question though, even if we say asu, nihinami dasu, my mitirani, ha amar Rabbi Yoshua, e mamzer el michai ve mitopeti. Rabbi Yoshua himself said that you're not a mamzer if it's an isur karet. You're only a mamzer if it's an isur chai ve mitopeti. So even, right, even if you're going to say that one had a problem with the other of mamzerim, right, we said in one direction there's mamzer, right, if Beit Shammai says marry the brother, according to Beit Hillel, those kids are mamzerim. So even if you say that, they're not mamzerim, because Rabbi Yeshua held that only Yisro Mito Beitin causes you to be a mamzer, and not Yisro Karin. And these arayot are Yisro Karin. So what are they saying? No, mihinami de mamzer lo have pagum miyahave. It would be pagum, though, okay? Pagum meaning can't marry a kohen. So now I say, how do we know it's pagum? Mikal v'chomer me'almana. Ma almana she'eni surano hei b'chol bakol, okay, what's with an almana? An almana, we're talking about an almana la kohen gadol. If an almana marries a kohen gadol, what happens to her? Okay, she, first of all, first they want to learn a kav v'chomer like this. An almana, if an almana marries a kohen gadol, it's usher. At that point, if she gets he dies, she now is psula to any kohen. She's basically mechalelet atzma. She turns herself into a chalala by the fact that she did a forbidden marriage. Okay, normally an almanah can marry a kohen. He just can't marry grusha, chalutza, gioret, zona. Okay, but an almanah he can marry, but a kohen gadol can't marry an almanah. So if a kohen gadol marries an almanah, and then somehow she becomes an almanah again, he dies, she now can't marry a regular kohen. So she's mechalel gatzma, and her children are mechulalim. Okay, they're psulim lakuna. Now, what's unique about this Isser? Eini surano heg bakol. It's a unique halacha that only applies to one person, right? There's only one guy who she can marry, and that's the Kohen Gadol. Right? We learned maybe it could be more than one, because if he was a Kohen Gadol at some point, right, we learned that he has this Isser upon him, because remember we learned in Yoma, once he's a Kohen Gadol, he doesn't aim or redeem, right? They used to have Kohenim Gadolim every year in a certain time period. Anyway, but it's still not noheg bakol. It's only, and also, her Isser now is actually noheg in all Kohenim. Okay, but it's still not bakol because it's only kohanim. And in her case, b'na pagum. So zoshi isura shave bakol. Okay, it doesn't say the rest of this, but kal v'chomer that her son should be pagum. Okay, in this case, this saha goes and marries the esherach, or she goes and marries the ishzar before she does chalitza. So what should we say? That she should be asur lakol also. Because she's asur bakol now, and she can be potentially to anyone who's an ishzar, right? She now can't marry anybody until she does chalitza. Or, right, it's not a halacha. It might be unique, let's say, to her, the brother of her, but it applies to anyone, not just to kohen. So because of that, we say that if she does this forbidden marriage that could potentially be married to anybody, her kids are now pagum. That's the kavachomer we make. Okay? So we're going to stop here. We're going to go more into the story tomorrow. We'll finish it up, and then we get to another really, really interesting story, which is the same time period and very similar references to the story of Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel. When Rabbi Gamliel gets kicked out being the Nasi because he embarrasses Rabbi Yeshua, and then they go Lefayez. There's a whole, that whole famous story. What?
With the Tanur?
No, not Tanur Rosh Lachnai. That's another famous story that also has, should really be brought up in this context about, you know, the bat kol, and that right. really relates to yesterday's stuff about the bat kol coming down, and do we listen to a bat kol, do we not? That's another story, but this story is very similar to the story, and all the same characters, when they kicked out Rabban Gamliel from being the Nasi, and then they went to see, well, maybe Rabbi Akiva could be the Nasi, but he doesn't have zkut avot, and maybe Elazar ben Azariah. In the end, and I'm sorry, they tried, who did they try? Rabbi Yeshua, but he was the Baal Machloket. And then they go to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and they say, well, he has money and he has zkut avot and he'll be the Nasi. And then they go to be Mefayes and bring Rabban Gamliel back, and then they have to keep Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The whole story, there's a lot of similar references to this story, although it's a very different story, but the same characters. We're going to see Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva and some similar literary things. We'll see what we make of it. Good, interesting story to start off tomorrow.